One of the hallmarks of public media is the ability to go with more and longer segments. What I used to do in 30 seconds or 90 seconds, now we get 2 to 4 minutes to tell you about what's happening. Oh, by the way, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the M2M podcast, a production of Market to Market and the Iowa PBS Network. I want to tell you that what we have been trying to do during the pandemic coverage that we've been doing for several weeks now is take some interviews that are just full of so much insight that we just never were able to bring you or edit down. We want to bring you the full version. Today, Peter Tubbs is going to have a conversation with Chris Dubois. He's from a company called IRI, and they'll kind of go into a little back and forth about what that is and what that company does. But basically, they monitor the pricing of the foods that you see in the grocery store. And they see how it goes up and goes down, where the trends are. It's just an insightful conversation that Mr. Tubbs leads us on this edition of the M2M podcast.
Let's start BC before COVID. Okay. Where were consumers moving in food in general and protein specifically the last 6, 12, 18 months? And then conversely, conversely on the other side, we'll talk about where have they been the last 90 days.
Oh, that's fine. I just so you know, before we kind of cut it, I'm happy to go either way. So there's probably not a question. If I really can't answer it, I'll tell you flat out.
But super.
It's totally fine.
So. Let's start with the before.
Okay. When you think about before COVID, a lot of the numbers that we've been seeing in the meat industry in the U.S., and I'm specifically talking about the retail industry. So if you think about what's sold at Walmart, what's sold in your local grocery, what's sold in dollar and drug, we track all that. And it's been flat for the last couple of years. There might be up 1% on dollars, down 0.5% on volume, but it's been very steady and flat, which kind of says not much change. But there have been a few things underlying it that were big deals going in. So the rise of organic foods, a very big trend inside, especially inside chicken, was a big, big piece. And beef had been picking up as well as turkey. The drive towards no antibiotics or feeding animals without antibiotics, those sales were growing much faster than total meat. And then anything to make the consumer's life easier is probably the third big trend. And that's across every protein. So the more that it's either fully prepared or close to fully prepared, the word we use is value added. So that can be seasoned, marinated, et cetera. That's growing twice as fast as meat. So those were the three big trends that we had our eyes on going in.
Okay, the last 90 days when everything got thrown upside down.
So if you can imagine a flat boat and a sailboat, no wind, sort of moving along the waves, that's what the meat industry was in the retail world. And now what we're looking at are numbers that are just crazy. They are phenomenal, and it's everything the industry's ever wished for, at least on the retail side. Think about dollar sales up 45%. That's what's been going on in the last 10 weeks. Volume up 35%. Those are rock star numbers. It is everything the industry ever wanted. America's cooking more at home. They're trying more recipes. They're trying more proteins. And it's been a powerful surge. And as a result, the meat department's become the star of the store. I can keep going. We can do this all day.
I understood. No, that's good.
Okay. Sorry, I also don't want to overstep your show here.
No, don't worry. I edit heavily, so that
okay.
Yeah, we can nip and tuck where we need to nip and tuck.
Okay.
A lot of the jump in sales were in many ways sort of panic buying and hoarding, and I don't know how long there's going to be ground beef in the case, so I'm going to max out while I can. Yeah. Is it just we bought 4 months worth of protein, and now over the next 3 months, we're going to buy less as we work through those inventories in each of our freezers?
It's a great question. We get some version of that question every day from our clients. So one way or another, that question comes through. But to be really clear, back in March, say the 15th and the 22nd, just to be really precise, there were very big spikes. So if we think 45% was a big number up, try to wrap your head around 95, 96% increases in sales. That was stock up and that was panic buying. What we've seen is it's come down to more manageable levels, typically right around 25 to 40% increases year over year. So the numbers have become a little smaller, but they're still substantial. This is still, I mean, just incredible growth. If I think back to my 30 years in the business, almost every meeting in an association had been around, how do we get people to cook more at home? How do we get them to have family meals around the table? How can they only try three or four dishes and only buy three or four cuts of meat? And the answer is, you know, it's hard. So the whole industry has been working on recipes and innovations and how to make it easier for the consumer. They've worked so hard. And then, you know, out of this has become everything the industry's wanted, which is people are cooking at home. They're trying all kinds of things. And it's been phenomenal. But so coming back to your question, are they stockpiling? The answer is not really. They stockpiled before and they've eaten it down. And now we're just seeing a steady state. And what'll change that steady state is the interaction between food service and retail. So as we all kind of know, food service has been to some degree closed down and it's opening up in various ways across the country. We track that on our website. So you can track what we call the supply index and consumer demand index on our website. So you can see how states are opening up. So as you expect them to open up, the big question is how much more will people go out to eat? You know, do they go back to the regular patterns of going out the Friday, Saturday night, or even during the week, getting takeout? Or will it be restrained? I don't have that answer. Everything in our consumers' surveys say it's going to be a slower recovery back into food service. So I don't expect anything quick, like a big changeover to say, let's go back to February how it used to be. I think it's going to be a slow crawl back to the food service world. So I expect to see retail elevated for quite a bit over time.
Do you also track the institutional and food service side of things, or are you focused mostly on retail consumer sales?
No, we focus very heavily on the retail consumer sales. So we're tracking the retail outlets. So any place a consumer would go to buy meat, we track. So we track it by pounds and dollars, and we can break it down by cuts. And we know if they bought a 1 pound package of ground beef, or if that was a mix of ground beef and pork and things like that. So we know it to a very fine level. But the food service side is something we just kind of blend in from some other sources that are widely published as well.
One of the concerns I'm seeing from my reading is that as herds are either having to be liquidated before processing or, or herds being managed as they're being bred more slowly, they're being fed more slowly to try and spread them out to kind of avoid a hangup where there's a bottleneck, is in some ways going to set up potentials for shortages down the line of 3 months or 6 months as you're sort of delaying the front end of the process. It messes things up in the back end. Are you seeing a potential for lower availability of some products as we move down the line 3 or 6 months?
Yeah, a lot of my clients who are the big processors. So if you think of the big pork names or beef names and chicken names, it's absolutely the people we deal with and help day in, day out and trying to work through some of this. So as those plants have slowed down, either because workers are out and they're sick or whatever, it's backed the animals up. And what that's caused is I've called it supply chain stress. Now that's a very nice word for saying there's outages here and there, but it's we've seen a less of pure outages, like a store is flat out, that it might be they're short on pork for a little bit until the next truck comes in, or they can find chicken breasts but not whole chickens. So it's more of a shortage around certain cuts. We haven't really seen the case that people are going consistently out of a supermarket with nothing to buy. So, and as a result, you're seeing people try a lot of new products for once. So we're seeing ground pork sales up 40% over the last 10 weeks. Ground pork has been flat to down for a long period of time. They have a lot of new buyers. I mean, how exciting is that? If you're thinking of a marketer, think of sausage buyers. The sausage had been a flat category at best, and only the top brands were really winning for a while. Sausage is now outgrowing the meat department. You know, they're growing faster than that. So all the new buyers coming in trying these products is a fantastic opportunity for a retailer to engage. Yeah, bring in, help that customer continue to buy more products, or for the processors to continue to open up and take these new customers and market to them differently. We do a lot of that with our frequent shopper cards and panels and consumer surveys. So, you know, part of seeing the growth coming out of this, in other words, it's wonderful when the market's up, you know, your sales are up 40% through supermarkets. It's probably not going to be that way forever. So that ability to go find those new buyers, talk to them now, continue to build that relationship and the dialogue, and who knows, maybe make offers, but it's that marketing edge right now that will really define success for processors down the road. But it's an exciting time that way, because people, if you go back to how people buy products, and they're thinking about what they will, they tend to buy the same cuts each and every week. So a family will rotate recipes, say 7 to 12 recipes is about the average in the U.S. And that goes back to Tuesdays or Taco Tuesdays or Wednesdays pork chop night. It's all there, right? So everybody's got that rotation. So what breaks that rotation? What makes that family change? And it's, this pandemic has been that change of they have to cook more meals at home. Maybe their favorite cut isn't always available, so they're going to try something new. And that might be lamb. It could be ground pork. It could be a wide variety of other cuts. And as a result, when you see people, if you look at a lot of the websites, whether it's Amazon, Walmart, or others, people are buying air fryers. They're buying the Instant Pots. And those kind of sales are up very strong. And as a result, you now have the perfect, a great world where people have the tools at home. They've had 3 months to practice using them, and they've had a great chance to use a wide variety of different cuts. So what's happening in the meat market is a tremendous reset that I think everybody in the industry wished would happen. I'm not sure anybody would have wished it would have happened through a pandemic, but what's happened now is people are much more familiar with different cuts, and they've had good experiences. And as a result, we continue to expect this kind of sales strength to continue over time. In other words, once people are comfortable and confident making dishes, they'll continue. So this is how you get new dishes into that 7 to 12 recipes a family works. This is how you get a new protein in the middle of it. So what a tremendous, to me, it's a tremendous opportunity for the meat industry, and it's, yeah, it's the and their sales have shown. I mean, when you see the sales versus the rest of the store, everybody's up. But the meat industry's really been a tremendous provider and a beneficiary of this, and their sales shine inside the store.
That's part of a consternation among some of our viewers, because they both understand that, you know, if they're producing a critter, They're seeing, because of the supply chain issues, they're seeing record lows for their critters, you know, on the foot, and yet seeing retail volumes go up, retail prices go up, and the packers kind of making really strong margins. So we have a lot of conversation around our office of you know, is this long term? Is this sustainable? What's that going to mean on the producer's side? But it's interesting that you think it's going to, on the consumer side, the demand is going to, it's not just going to go back to how it was in January once we hit July.
Yeah, I see sustained, really solid demand coming through in the supermarket side. And seeing what's going on in the farm, it's hard. I mean, I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin. I've walked an awful lot of corn. And I've lived around dairy farms for a long time. So I know the world reasonably well. And you know, my heart goes out because the farmers are working so hard out there. But the good news is that even when we do get through this time, and everybody will, you know, the fact is, I think we've got an American consumer that's very well, that's better trained now. Maybe I shouldn't say very well, because not everybody's going to cook fantastically. But people will have tried more dishes. So I think the demand you're going to see for beef, pork, chicken will continue as they have more at-home occasions. You know, the other side, you know, another reason why I think retail demand is going to continue to be strong is we're seeing trends of just more work from home. And if you look at us right here on this interview, we're working from home, something that I would not have expected 6 months ago. But, you know, here we are. And, you know, if you think about, if you add that up across the U.S. and you think about the meal occasions, think about the breakfast opportunities. So when people are working at home and their kids are either studying from home or they're getting them off to a good day, all of a sudden sausage and eggs can be a possibility, or eggs and bacon or something else around that. It's maybe more fixed than just sending people out with a protein bar. So the opportunities for more meal occasions at home, whether it's breakfast or lunch, think about the lunchtime opportunities for the workers at home. Do they really want to have just a, you know, another ham and cheese sandwich, or are we going to try to do something different? So the opportunities for processors to continue to drive that retail business are huge. And those are two of the big trends I'd see. Not, you know, overwhelming, but they're going to sustain and grow over time. In other words, we're not going to have people go back to where we were 6 months ago on the not working from home as much. Once companies have figured it out, I think we did a survey and 74% of companies said they're going to be having people work at home work at home more often. And consumers are expecting that as well. Those meal occasions are going to shift back here. And that's a huge beneficiary for the supermarket and the meat processors that sustain it.
Yeah, as someone who's gone from prepping probably 10 meals a week till it seems like 25, yeah, we're blowing through our freezer pretty quickly. So
it's exhausting, isn't it? Like, you go down there and you think, didn't I just have like three packages of something? And the answer is no. I mean, I continually find myself surprised by how much we're going through.
And we're definitely, my house is very guilty of the having seven recipes. I think it was like we're down to five. And so, you know, it's like, wait, we've had tacos twice this week. I can't have them again. So, are you seeing differences in increases in sales volume between higher end retailers and the more mid market and low market? Or has it been consistent throughout all the demographics of the different
regions? One of the things that surprised me, I think, is the fact that the neighborhood grocery store has really come back to life. So when people are realizing that, you know, that neighborhood bricks and mortar store, they're still doing very well. So it's not just high end or low end. It's a lot of the neighborhoods and a lot of the strong independents have done extremely well. And then the classic ones, I think, you know, if you look at some of the bigger retailers like Walmart, Kroger, Albertsons, other ones, they're doing well. Almost everybody's doing well. But the other thing that's been driving it has been e-commerce. And we have rates of adoption that have just gone up through the roof. So I look at this as sort of pulling forward a trend that would have been going on incrementally for the next 5-10 years. So in a way, it's sort of like, welcome to 2025. And the rates of e-commerce growth have gone up so fast. And what we're finding is people like it. They enjoy it. They found it makes their life easier. So they're not going back. So that the bigger stores that are easier to work with are also getting some of that business too. But e-commerce will be the thing that really defines the winners versus the ones who fall behind. But there's really nothing stopping a local retailer from being pretty good at e-commerce as well.
This is probably outside the scope of what you track, but we're seeing a lot of traction for the direct to consumer from the farm of, I have 10 head and a place to process them. Who wants a quarter? And you know, that a lot of people who had never purchased that way now purchasing that way. So I know it's that's a percent of a percent of a percent of total volumes, but it's interesting to see if those consumers will continue to do that now, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, or if they'll revert back to their old habits.
Yeah. No, I think it's very common in what I would call produce from a CSA side, you know, just a way of supporting farmers and then just taking that full package. But in the other side, we see it in seafood. You know, if you want to go online, you can find an Alaskan fisherman or a fisherwoman, and he or she will ship you that day's catch. And if you really want, you know, and you'll probably have to take whatever they caught, but you know, the fact is you'll have very fresh fish, and the same thing goes for meat. So what we're finding is consumers are looking for that personal connection overall. So while the supermarket's been a great source, they've had enormous success. And I think the supermarket industry will add $20 billion of sales this year to meat. I mean, it's a big number. So like you said, a percent of a percent, but yeah, that trend is really there. So there's a real desire for local. There's a real desire to have a connection to the land. And most people don't have that connection. So the way they can get it is by having either buying half a cow from a trusted source, something like that, or buying a big, big side of beef or half of a pig. You know, that a major purchase that lets them stock up, that's a very common way. And then there's big companies like a ButcherBox or other ones that have been very successful in growing, and that whole direct-to-consumer piece is working. But I'd also say the big processors, especially on the chicken side, are starting to explore it. So more and more, I think that's going to become a major experiment. It's not an easy one. I mean, I get those phone calls from ranchers sometimes, and they say, how do I get direct? You know, it sounds so easy. That's such a great market. It's not easy, but it can be worth it going out, because there is a market there.
What kind of questions are you getting that we haven't covered?
I think the biggest questions, come around a little bit from what I touched on earlier, which was, how fast does that switch happen from food service back to retail? And that's something that's got everybody kind of up at night. You know, how do I look at it? Because right now, most of the big processors are running at, call it 70% fill rates in some cases. I mean, so their retailers aren't getting everything they want. Yeah, in fact, if you're if Walmart might give you a gold star if you're at 70% in some categories. I mean, normally you might get a whack over the head, but that could be a very positive number. So when you think about that fact, that flip to food service is a big one, because that's a reset of lines, that's a big change in equipment, that's a big change in staffing. Some plants that were dark or repurposed need to switch back. So it seems easy if you're sitting in your chair or walking through a supermarket to say, why can't they make more bacon? But food service bacon comes in very different packages. It comes in 20-pound sets or bigger at times, and that's not retail ready. So to get things retail ready isn't that simple. And then the other one is export markets too. It's very easy to think that meat is just an American, what's raised in America stays in America. The answer is, a lot of our meat's always been exported. So how companies open up, what tariffs are, I don't have any input on that, but I know it's a very, very big deal in terms of overall demand and product flow.
Define fill rate for me, just so I'm on the same page.
A basic thing is, like, if I ordered 100 items, I gave you 70. If you ordered 100 items, I gave you 70. So It's not an evil thing. It's just simply sometimes the plants are at capacity and they're simply just trying to allocate fairly among customers.
Every industry has its jargon, and you sort of, it's easy to forget. I do it all the time with my family, with my friends. I'll use TV jargon and they'll look at me like, what are you talking about? So, what did you expect to talk about that we didn't talk about? Anything?
I came in with a very open mind, so I'm just kind of thrilled to be, with PBS. I mean, I watch a lot of the shows, and I think this is a tremendous opportunity. So I was able to talk about the big trends that we've seen coming. So if I could always come back to you on the, organic, probably slowing down for now, NAE not going away. But we got a lot of the big trends that matter inside the meat case. And, if I say, what are the three big things I would watch going out, we hit them, which is, work from home will change demand. It's going to change how people eat lunch. It's going to change what breakfast looks like. The food service to retail swap is a big one. So, I mean, we hit them from that side. I feel good.
Questions, comments, or concerns, hit us up, market2market@iowapbs.org. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for listening.